Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. This month, I am rebroadcasting several of my most remarkable interviews. And in this show, you will be hearing yet again the amazing interview, not to mention the amazing music of Dottie Anita Taylor. So hang on, here come the show. Is about finding, discovering, uncovering, recovering who we really are, and then working towards becoming it. Because I believe, based on my 30 years of private practice as a psychotherapist, that most of us are not being who we really are. We're being a limited version of who we really are. What we're doing, how we're acting, what we're thinking about ourselves, what we're telling other people we are, both with our words and our behavior, it's the truth. It's just not the whole truth. It's a limited version, which I call our cover story. And then undercover are the qualities, ideas, skills, interests, beliefs, ways of being that for one reason or another we felt we had to hide. And so we did. We did such a good job of hiding it that we hid it eventually even from ourselves. And so many of us have capacities of which we are completely unaware. And quite often, it is those capacities which we badly need and which we struggle thinking we're having to develop or that we can't really have, when in actual fact, it's there all the time. What needs to be done is to discover it, recover it. And that's what this show is about. For some of the show, I usually talk about the kinds of things that get in our way that stop us from discovering who we really are. And for the other part of the show, I do an interview series called Anatomy of an Artist, in which I interview people who make their living or their life with their art. And I do this because, as I will say to the person I'm interviewing in this show, you can't really be an artist making a living or a life out of art in this culture unless it's who you really are. We don't make it easy for artists in our culture. And so it has to be exactly who you really are. And so the people I interview, at least in that area of their life, are so demonstrably who they really are. And that is so true for the person whose interview I am playing today. Dottie Anita Taylor is, I want to say she's a musician. She's a musician. She's been a musician for as long as she's been alive. You'll hear the story. It's quite remarkable. But she's not just a musician. She's a woman who knows all of the things that capture, excite, interest her. And she's pursued many of them. And probably she can't pursue all of them simply because there isn't enough time in anybody's life. But for a gentle, quiet, fairly unassuming woman, Dottie Anita Taylor has put her arms, her heart, her intellect, her courage, her passion around all of the art forms, including mathematics, that have drawn her. I'm going to play the interview in a minute, but before I do, I'm going to play a piece, not the entire cut, from a song called A Child Is Born, off of her CD, which is called A Morning Glory. And at the end of the show, after the interview, I'm going to play another cut from the CD. But I want you to hear the extraordinary sound that comes out of Dottie Anita Taylor's flute before you hear the sound of her voice. So here is A Child Is Born, followed by my interview with Dottie Anita Taylor. Here with Dottie Anita Taylor in my kitchen. She was gracious enough to come and do this interview here. And so she doesn't know anything about me, so I'm going to explain.
Okay.
I do this internet radio show, and I do a series called Anatomy of an Artist, and I interview people who make their living or their life with their art. I know, because I heard you last night say that you started this quite early, so I know that you have, right?
Right.
So I always ask the same question, and it is, how did it happen? How did it find you? Oh, and before you answer that, I have heard it said that flautist and flutist are both correct. Do you like one of them?
I prefer flutist, because it doesn't sound to me as stuffy as a flautist.
Yes, yes, yes. And it sounds like the instrument.
And it sounds exactly.
Right.
I play the flute.
You play the flute, it makes you a flutist. And yes. Also a pianist.
And a pianist.
Yeah. Uh-huh, uh-huh. And classical and jazz.
Yes.
Yes. Uh-huh. And I haven't heard you play classical, but the jazz, oh my God. You play what you hear, or you play what occurs to your mind. I mean, it's in your mind, it's out your mouth. Is that close?
It comes
to
me and through me. That's the best way to say it.
Yeah, and it's clear.
Because it's instantaneous. I don't have time to think about it.
No.
It just kind of happens.
Yeah, I know. And you can see it when you're doing it. Mm-hmm. You can see it. I mean, I'd have been really surprised if you told me that it was somehow premeditated, because that's not what it looks like. No. Oh,
not
glad.
At all.
Okay.
Not at all.
Okay, so will you tell me how it happened to you? How you got it? How it got you?
The story, I was too young to know, to remember, and I'm told that I had a sister, and she was taking piano lessons. She was 7 years old at the time, and I was three. And she would go and have her piano lessons, and she would practice at home, and when she would get up from the piano, I would go to the piano and play her pieces. And my mother said she went to piano teacher, it was Miss Caputo, Camille Caputo in New York, and she said, "Miss Caputo, Dottie is playing Yvonne's pieces." And she says, "What are you talking about?" She's three. And she said, "No, she's playing Yvonne's pieces." So she said, "You have to hear her." So she says, okay, when you come back next time, I'm gonna listen to her." So I evidently sat down and played my sister's pieces. So my mother asked her, would you give her lessons? She says, "Only on one condition. No one can play her pieces beforehand, because then she'll never learn how to read the music and so
right.
on."
Because so it was going right from your ears to your fingers.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And whatever I heard, I evidently could pick out or play or whatever. So
it was a smart teacher.
Yeah. So Miss Caputo taught me. And my sister and I stayed with her for 4 years, I guess it is, and when I turned seven. I think she recommended that we go to Juilliard, that we take the test to get into there, because they had a preparatory division for young people until you go there until you reach graduate from high school, and then you can go to the college or go to another college. So we got into Juilliard. Both of us got in. And we were there majority of the time on scholarship, both my sister and I. And so I spent 10 years at Juilliard until I graduated from high school. So I like to say it, because I'm just so grateful that it turned out like it did, and that my parents had the commitment that they did. They were musicians themselves.
Oh, they were?
Yeah. My dad was a singer with one of the black quartets that traveled through the country. And he was a waiter also at the same time. My mother was a violinist, very accomplished violinist, actually. And she played piano, too. But the main thing was this. So we were all performing at the same time. You know, my sister and I were doing concerts. We did concerts from the time we were very young.
I'm curious, what was the reaction of your sister to the fact that you were playing her pieces without having had to learn them?
I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, I have, looking back on it, I have a sense that at a later stage that there was a bit of jealousy or, you know, competition.
Yeah.
Because what happened too is that, and this is just fact, I mean, I was better in school. She had to really study hard.
You mean you were a better student?
A better student. Mm-hmm. When did I say better school?
No, you said you were better in school, even the academic stuff.
Even the academics. I mean, I was always like a 90% student. I was always even
And you weren't working that hard at it?
No. I mean, I would study, but it seemed as though I didn't have to study as hard or as long as my sister did.
It was the same thing with the piano. She had to learn it somehow, and you didn't.
She had to work harder at it to do it. And she was an excellent, you know, pianist also, but I didn't have to practice very much. In fact, to this day, I prefer not to practice, but but I didn't have to do much. And I remember sometimes, like, practicing the night before, you know, before my lesson. And I'd go in.
Cramming for the exam.
Yeah, exactly. And my teacher would say, "Oh, that was so wonderful, Dorothy."
So it's a gift, right?
Yeah, I have to say it.
Yeah.
My name is Dorothy, means a gift of God. So I guess that's what happened. But I do say that, I mean, just to, you know, who I am, what I'm made of, I mean, I have things that are gifts. I have perfect pitch. I can tell you what a note is just listening to it. And there are just certain things that...
Came with the territory.
Yeah, the way I write. I mean, I write music. And just as you say, you think... Your interpretation of how the music was played by me yesterday, when I write, I sit down, it's like writing a letter. It's like, and that's why I say it comes to me. It's, I hear it, and then it's like someone's playing the recording for me, and I'm just writing it down. All of it. If it's lyrics, it's the lyrics, it's the melody, it's the harmony, and I can hear it all, and I just record it.
So, I'm finding myself thinking, this could be a mixed blessing. But I'm having the sense that for you it was not mixed, that it was clear, that it was pure. Because it's an extraordinary gift. I mean, there's no question about it. It's what everybody would want to have if they could, and few have it. So those who didn't have it could be expected to be, I don't know, jealous may be too strong.
Well, it's interesting you say that because maybe it is like a mixed blessing. Because, I mean, it hasn't been really, really strong through my lifetime, but, being kind of like on the top of everything. Yeah. I take music classes and it's like, by the time I got to college, I went to Syracuse first, and I had to take a test so they could place me in the theory class. And I remember to this day the thing I got one thing wrong. And because of the one thing that I got wrong, they put me in junior theory. It was junior theory that was the end of like the theory classes, and then you take compositional. But they put me in junior theory, and I'm like, I don't know if they should have done this, right? And it's to this day, it's something I have to think about. It's called the Neapolitan Sixth. And it's something that I forgot on the test. I can't tell you what it is right now. Sometimes I know it, sometimes I don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what it is about that. Anyway, that's what I missed on the test. So they put me in junior theory. And it's like I got 100 on everything.
Right, bored to tears.
And even when it came to the Neapolitan Six, I'd go and review it. And then I know, So, and what happened is like it became, she's going to get 100 again. So...
We're talking about the students when I'm talking about the teacher.
Students in my class.
Yeah, right, of course. Forgive me, but this kind of gift, it separates you.
It does, it does.
It can hardly do other.
As in the school, the same thing, because I would, I was always getting the hundreds in the 90s, and I was always number one or number two, and it makes me the weirdo, kind of.
Yeah, it separates you. Yeah. I mean, even last night at the jam, the quality of what you're doing is so stands out so remarkably from what everybody else is doing. You can't help it. Do you know what I mean?
I can't.
No, of course not. And why would you want to? I mean, to be able to do that, it's. But again, it does. It separates you. You don't have to answer anything I ask you. So,
okay,
I'm perfectly happy to say, just don't want to talk about that, and mm-hmm. I won't, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering if then interpersonally it got in your way. I mean, if people are looking at you as different than they are, as somehow maybe even... we have a tendency to make people who are really skilled, really talented, to give them, to make them seem like they're snobs and stuff like that. We assign these qualities to them, which almost never do they have, but never mind, it makes us feel better.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm talking
mm-hmm.
about?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's something that, it's subtle in a way, because people will, like, pretend to be a good friend or whatever. But there's an undercurrent.
Yes.
That you feel, and it comes out in different ways with different people. Sometimes it's just a word or a sentence that comes out from someone in talking and passing, but you know, I listen very carefully. I'm just that way, you know, and I'm kind of a people person, love to see what people are, you know, love to really get to know people. And you do that by listening to what they have to say about different things and all. Even, like, there's someone who's always said, oh, yeah, she's a genius. And I know that it's said.
You can hear.
Like knocking. You know, it's not like genuine from the heart. It's almost an envious kind of thing or something.
Yeah, there's an edge.
But there's a definite edge to it.
Yeah.
And so I feel it, but I guess for my own salvation kind of, I decided a long time ago to kind of, categorize people, you know, friends and acquaintances. And there's a little group over here that are really the core, true friends who know me, who understand me, and accept me for who I am.
Yes.
You know, I'm who I am, you know, I can't.
And who you can trust.
And who I can trust.
Yeah.
And then there are those who pretend, and those who are out, who I can just tell, you know, they, you know, would rather I not be who I am or whatever. You know.
Or they'd like to be you.
Or that. But I've learned to be able to accept the people for who they are, you know, and those who, you know, would rather not, that's okay, you know, I have enough support, you know. So it carries me through, so I still have my sanity, you know.
Well, and you know, the other thing I hear is that this ability to create a group of people, however many, that you can trust, who will support you, who you support, who you feel that you can be yourself with, without having to worry or pretend, or whatever else you know, we all have to do with some people, that skill, I'm assuming that came from the acceptance and encouragement you got from your family.
Yeah, I'd say it does. I mean, because, I mean, my parents, too, my mother was, she was a brilliant woman, I mean, musically and you know, she even worked. She worked for the post office in New York, right? And that was one of the things. She was a statistician before that. But she was like the first black woman to be able to achieve the level that she did in the post. I mean, that kind of thing. And as a child, she was like the violinist. And
yeah, I'm thinking, what year are we talking about here? With your mother, when she was coming up as a violinist, when she was a child, I mean,
she was in her teens. I don't know exactly when. I don't know when she started.
Because we're talking about a time when that would have been a very difficult.
Yeah. I mean,
even in New York City. I mean, no.
So maybe we're talking in the very late 20s.
Yeah. Right.
Early 30s.
Right.
And she was. I found not that long ago. I found some articles written about her and how she was. You know, she was like one of the young violinists.
But that also must have set her apart remarkably.
Exactly.
So
I think she had the same kind of experience.
I'm sure.
And then my dad had the fame from being in the quartet, so he was, you know, he was John Taylor. And coming up, it's interesting because to me it was just, you know, that's my mom and my dad. Yeah, he sings. Yeah, she plays violin.
Right.
And we had a very musical setting there at home, which was very, very special. But I just thought everybody's life was kind of like that on some level.
But again, that it seems to me that environment made it possible for you to know that there would be people that you could trust, that you could find.
Yeah, because
and that you didn't have to be adversarial with everybody.
Because I had that support or that comfort.
Yeah.
Right there at home. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
And from my teachers, too.
So they all wanted it for you.
Yeah, they just, like Miss Computer, you know, pushed me to go, not push us, but, you know, I think she was just instrumental in having us go to Juilliard. And then Miss Rubinoff, my teacher at Juilliard, she just always, I just remember her as just being very, just pushing me to the nth to get me to play as well as I possibly could. You know, I never had any negative feelings. She was a good good teacher. She was an excellent teacher. And when I began to teach piano, I used the very method she used to get me to do what I did.
So do you teach?
I have a couple of flute students at the moment. But through the years, I've had, you know, piano students. And at one time, I had, you know, quite a few, maybe about 15 at a time. I do my yearly concerts, you know, at the end of the year and so on. And I just, I'll use the word lost, I guess, my last piano student, because she was in high school and her load just got too heavy, so. But I decided not to fill the slots as they went off to college, so that I can focus a little more on myself. I have written a lot, and I really need to get it all printed out nicely.
Okay, so just take me a little bit through the career. I mean, we've got you coming out of college, essentially, and
what happens? I married early, and I had children early, but I never stopped the music.
I was an
accompanist for choirs. I did some solo performances. Now this is like say through the very late 60s into the 70s. I'm not playing flute. I'm just playing piano, and I'm doing a little bit of jazz. Then I did my first jazz gig was on piano. When I was in Syracuse, this guy thought that I would be able to cover for this someone who couldn't make a gig, and he says, "You can do it, Dottie, you can do it." And I think his name was George. I said, "George, I don't know that I could, I've never done this before. You can do it, don't worry, these guys are great, and they will be fine." And I did. It was a fraternity party, and I remember it was like a house, like a walk-through house, almost like where I grew up, and we were in the living room area where this piano was, and I made it through the gig, and they didn't tell me I was horrible. So, between playing for my church and playing accompanying choirs, and then I became music director for things. I was music director at a camp, so I was always kind of using all of my skills and in all different areas. You know, I always listened to a lot of music, so. Like I was writing and listening to and using some rhythm and blues, some show, you know, in the show area, you know, the American Songbook. Mm-hmm. So I was always doing many, many different kinds of things. I eventually I was music director for a children's theater group, and oh boy, it's a long life, right? and then, even to back up a little bit for high school, I was accompanied to Glee Club in high school.
So these things, did they sort of come to you, or did you go looking for them? Do you know what I mean?
I've never really gone
looking for anything.
No, well, a few things. I mean, there's certain things I don't know, the Kennedy Center, right? This is later on, I'm kind of skipping around. But I did play at the first Mary Lou Williams Women in Jazz Festival in 1996.
Wow.
And I had applied for that, or I had talked to Billy Taylor about it, and they called me to do it. And I just recently, not too long ago, sent in a tape again to see if I can bring my own group to that. So there are virtually a few things through my career where I have, you know, like applied to get it or sought it out. But I'm not one to get on the phone looking for gigs.
Right.
And I've been very fortunate because, like, I'll do a concert here and someone will be there who will say, "May I have your card? I like what you do." And I'm little, just like you did.
Right,
you know?
right.
And then someone, the next thing, and the next thing. And it's always been, a sufficient amount. You know, sometimes I look for more, but when it's drier, it's like, okay, that's what it is for now, and do something else. You know? But there's always been the music on, going to school, and there's the music. And my sister and I, this is even going back further, my sister and I did a debut concert at a place called, it was called Carl Fisher Recital Hall. It was across the street from Carnegie Hall on 57th Street, later known as Cammie Hall. And we did we had our debut concert, you know, and my sister and I, like during, this is through elementary and high school, while my parents were performing, my sister and I were giving concerts, and it would be just Dorothy and Yvonne Taylor, or we would be on lots of concerts with other artists, adults as well as other children. Mm-hmm. My sister and I would always play, like she'd do her solo pieces and I'd do my solo pieces, and then we always play duets. So that was for many years, you know,
that was your
that
life.
We did that. That was our life. That was what it was about. It was going to music school on Saturday and concerts usually on Sunday afternoon, because at that time in New York, there were a lot of like these community concerts where the young and the older, you know, just they put on these concerts, you know.
They don't do that much anymore, do they?
I think it's growing a little bit more now, yeah. But it's not like it was. You don't have as, you know, everyone had a piano, and, you know,
yeah,
even
right.
if they couldn't afford, right. you know, prime rib of beef or something,
they had a piano
in the living room, mm-hmm. and everyone took piano lessons. You know.
Right.
So that was just a time that was filled with music, you know. And even in my family, we'd have people for dinner, and a lot of the people would be musicians. And after dinner, there was this music hall. And to me, that was just
the way it was.
Life was. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was. Yeah.
Was there something you wanted to do that, I don't know, you didn't do or still want to do? Or?
Yeah, my list was long. I wanted to be so many things. I wanted to be a stewardess so that I could travel all over the world. I'd like to see the whole world, and I know it can. But I mean, every spot, kind of.
Yeah. So have you?
I've been traveling. Yeah, I have been traveling, and I hope to increase that so then I can do that. So that's one thing I wanted to do. That I wanted to be an interior decorator, and I didn't. I'd stab at it.
did you decorate your own?
Yeah, I did do my own place, and I think I do a pretty good job, you know, of doing it. I actually wanted to be a detective at one time. What happened is I wanted to be so many things.
Yeah.
And then you were a math teacher for all those years.
Yeah, both my mother, my daughter, and I are math and music, because I taught math for 30 years in New York City public schools. Yeah. So, and at one point in one school that I was at, and somehow through conversation, the string teacher found out that I played piano, so she started having me accompany the...
When they
she
didn't
her
know?
Pop, not when I came in, because I came in as a math... I came in as a math teacher. And so, I mean, if I'm there to teach math, I teach math. And then, through conversation,
yeah.
you know, she found out. And then I started accompanying them, and he's like, oh...
Yeah, right, look what we've got here, right?
I'd like to start choral music program in the school. This was like halfway, and I guess I'd been there about 6 years when he thought about this. Six, maybe more than that, 8 years. And he said, do you think you'd like to do that? And I said, oh, his name was Stanley Lisser. I said, Mr. Lisser, I said, that would be my dream job. You're going to give me math and the music, you know? And they gave me a room that had a piano. I was a piano in it, and it had these little rooms that were like practice rooms, and I was in my world, so... So I did the
wow.
I forgot how we got to this, but I did the math for 30 years, doing the music.
Well, all the things that you wanted to do.
Oh, yeah, I'm talking about what I wanted to do.
Do you read detective fiction? Do you read mysteries?
I used to. I've gotten out of it, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, I've gotten away from that right now, but I just kind of, I don't know, I'm there's so many things in life that I see that are attractive to me. Like, I do photography, and amateur, but... You know, I'm pretty good at it.
I believe you. I believe you.
And I wanted to, these are things that I wanted to do and I have done. I wanted to learn how to draw better. And so now I'm trying to take an art course, you know, taking a poetry course, write poetry. I want to write my autobiography and I want to write a novel.
It's lovely to hear, you know, mm-hmm. somebody who, for whom the world is... continually offering, you know, interesting and exciting things to do and be. Because it is. I know. I know. And yet, I think that's the minority opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that most people don't see it.
Just like I love sunrises and sunsets. I mean, I can just sit and continually stare. And I mean, it's just to die for. And people are just, other people around are just here.
I know.
And I'm like, you gotta look. But some people are not aware. And the beauty of the trees and the flowers. And they're just walking through life. Just
well, what's so interesting about you is that you seem to have access to the auditory stuff, you know, the stuff that comes in through your ears, but also through your eyes. That's not that common. That's really not that common. In my experience, people are pretty much one or the other. They take stuff in through their ears. Mm-hmm. They're called auditory learners or whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and or they take things in through their eyes and their visual. Mm-hmm. But to have it so intensely for both of those, and then you must also be kinesthetic because you, everything you do with your, you know, the piano and the you know, stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like you have all of the the senses. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty. And I think that's really unusual. Well, okay. I like to ask: is there anything I didn't ask I should have? Why don't I just wait and then? Because I have one more question.
I'll say this is part of my personal life, that I have a daughter and a son who have grown, and I have 5 grandchildren.
Oh, my gosh.
Wonderful, and who are brilliant, and they're in Georgia, unfortunately. Well, maybe it's unfortunate I'm in New York, one way or the other. But, yeah, that's a big
part of your life.
Big part of my life.
Yeah. Okay, the other question that I like to ask is, what would you say? Is there anything you would want to say about making a life with art? What that feels like, meant to you? Random thoughts, pretty much anything.
And I hesitate because it's that big.
Mm-hmm.
It's that big. I mean, to be, it's like I use the expression that says I am music because that's what I feel like. You know, I said it comes through me and all, and it. For some people, like, the feeling is, like, for some people, it's a sunset. For some people, it can be, like, seeing your grandchild for the first time. It can be, like, you know, those, I want to use the word, moments of ecstasy, that it's a big part of me from day to day, and it comes in different ways, whether it's writing something and finishing it, whether it's playing, because I do virtually so much music. It's moments in playing with my piano partner, you know, when the music is just, it hits a point that you can't explain, you know, and or playing like last night, and you know, being able to get up there and play with a group I've never played with before, and they give the kind of, play the kind of music that just makes it work right, you know. It happens so often that it just keeps me up here, you know what I mean? Someone once told me, and I don't want to say who it was, but someone once told me, it's like, they almost couldn't deal with me because there's just too much joy all the time.
Wow.
And I thought about that for a long time and felt very deeply sorry for the person who said it, but because they looked at it that way. I mean, that's what you want to head for. You know, it's like, and I'm ready to take on more, that kind of thing. But that's what it's always kind of been for me.
From day one, almost.
From day one, almost. You know, when you, even as a child, when you learn a piece and you can, you learn it and you finish, of course, a lot is memorized classical, you know. And you're able to do a recital or a concert or something, and like the moment, sometimes when you're in it and you just, you kind of get outside and you realize, well, like as a child, it's like, oh, I'm doing it just like she told me to do it. That's great, you know. Mm-hmm. Or you finish and the audience lets you know that it was even better than you thought it was.
Yeah.
And I had an experience one time, I played a piece and I guess I went so into it, I didn't remember playing the middle part of the piece. And when I finished, I asked my mom, I said, did I play the middle part? She said, what are you talking about? I remember playing the middle part, and you did, of course you did, and we left it there, but when I thought about it, it's like I was on automatic or whatever.
It's an altered state.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an altered state.
Somewhere else. But, and I was a child, I was, well, that was at Juilliard at the time, so maybe I was, I don't know, I want to say maybe I was a freshman or something. I was relatively young for that to happen, but I guess it doesn't matter the age.
No, I don't think it matters. I think really that the capacity to be taken over by something is really special.
Yeah.
It's really special. The experience of being so deeply in something that time passes, you don't notice.
That's right.
You know,
yeah.
I know,
yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
And that gift, I mean, that is so...
It's a blessing.
It's a blessing. Sure, it is. That's what it is. It's a blessing. And
A curse at times.
Well, speak just a little bit to that. What prompted you to say that?
Because sometimes it just takes you... I said it pretty fast tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I said it because it makes me realize that for that to happen, I am different. And so on some levels, like, you don't want to be different from anybody, you know.
That's that mixed blessing thing.
Yeah, and someone else who had knowledge in other ways of thinking, let's put it that way, had said, you're not like a lot of people. And I don't like hearing that. And I don't want to be unlike you I want to be regular. I want to be, you know, accepted, you know. But if you're different and you're unlike everybody else, it's just in and of itself, it doesn't seem like that's what I want to be, you know. I want to have all I have, but I want to be like everybody else, you know.
Well, you know, I think that's back to that thing about it being a mixed blessing.
Yeah, yeah,
and is. I wonder, it's interesting, I've not thought about this in quite this way before, but I wonder if we were a society that made room for everybody, that one didn't have to be like everybody in order to be appreciated, loved, valued, integrated, I don't even know what the word is. If we had that, if you'd have to pay a price for the gift, do you understand what I'm asking? I mean, or whether it comes with the territory of getting the gift that you then feel separate or different, or whether it's the group that makes you feel separate.
Oh,
do you understand the point I'm making?
I know.
And I don't...
Am I doing it to myself or has society made this happen?
Well, I don't think you're doing it to yourself. I'm wondering if it comes with the territory of the gift. Yes,
right. I think it comes with the territory.
You do?
I think that if it were a world where everyone is accepted and so on, I think that's what utopia is. I think that's what the perfect world is.
Yes.
I think it's what's to come. But I think that's the perfect world, which I'd like to see.
Yes.
I'd like to be part of, because, you know, I just think that if we didn't have these barriers that are set up to make a person, you know, a freak or whatever, and we just acknowledged, accepted, and...
Embrace.
Fed on. Yes.
Embrace. Yes.
If we could all share what we have,
yes,
the planet would just be unbelievably whatever. I mean, to share with other people. I mean, if I could, from whom I am, if I could just take in from so many other people who have so many other things. I mean, they say we only use like 10% of our brain. So that means there's 90%.
Yeah. Some of us are using more.
Okay. Well, that's I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know.
Oh, you must be.
No, you must be.
You must be.
Well, I get...
But the other thing that I want to say about this, I mean, it's very obvious, but I want to say it anyway, is that I believe that the large majority of people do not receive encouragement, support, even maybe love for who they are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so all that is left to them in order to feel good is to feel better than someone else. It's to somehow make someone else be less.
Okay.
And you can use anything to make someone laugh. You can use genius to make someone laugh. You know, it's very sad. But I think that's what we're talking about here. And that's why when I said the thing about the support you got from your family, there's no way to overemphasize the importance of that.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and that most people don't get it. The other thing I do in this show, the theme of the show is discovering who you really are and then becoming it. And it's my belief that most people are not all of who they really are. That they have cover stories which they present, and then there's lots of other stuff about themselves which they keep undercover. And the reason that I interview artists for the show is because I believe that in order to be an artist in this culture, it has to be who you really are. Because
There's no making it.
And lots of people wouldn't be artists if they had a choice, because it's hard. It's hard to be an artist in this culture. So it has to be something that's so integral that you really can't help it, that it's, you know.
I think you really can help it. I've tried to, like when I started learning the flute, you know, which was later on.
Right.
I don't remember learning the piano. I just...
Yeah, just it was
so
there.
Long, right. But I wanted to quit at one point. Thank goodness for my teacher, because I wanted to be able to do it. I didn't want to have to learn how to do it. I wanted to do it. And he said, you got to just hang in there. Because the flute is, it's not the easiest instrument to learn. He encouraged me, this was Frank West, I studied with Frank West, the great saxophone and flute player. And he encouraged me he said, hang in there. One day you're going to find that you're much further along than you were. And thank goodness he said that and was very encouraging. And it did happen like that.
And it makes me cry.
Oh.
I think we're so dependent on the people who come into our lives. It makes all the difference.
And that's why I talk about him. You know, I talk about my parents, I mean, the sacrifices they made, and teachers, even my teachers, and how they, the encouragement and the goodness in the approach that they used to get me to where I was, and then certain people along. I always talk about Frank, because Frank, people talk about my tone on the flute, and he did what is hard to, because I've taught flute. It's hard to convey what to do with your mouth to get the sound. What to, your mouth and your breath, and your body, to get a sound that's really rounded, really pure. And whatever, I know what he did. What he did for me enabled me to be able to understand what he was saying, and then, you know, produce what I do. So I love to give him the credit for it. You know?
Yeah, well, so. We would like to give him the credit for helping you become who you became, because you are a gift. There's no question about it.
Thank you.
You have it and you are it. Okay, if there's anything else you think you would like to say, I would like to hear it.
I love that painting on your wall. It's gorgeous.
I'll tell the artist. Thank you very much.
So, there you have the remarkable Dottie Anita Taylor, a woman who knew her music, knew herself to be music, by the time she was 3. It's probably even earlier than that, but maybe she couldn't make her fingers do that stuff on the piano before she was 3. And that was not nearly enough for her. Finding that, the music inside her, just allowed her to look for everything else that was inside of her. Photography, painting, math, knitting, whatever captured her. She knew it was her and went for it. This is an example of what it is I am trying to tell everyone they can be. To look inside and see what's there and not be afraid. Now, of course, Dottie, as is true for so many of the people that I interview, had families that supported it. Parents who said, wow, that's terrific, good for you. You know, that's good, that's who you are. I like it, do more of it. Not Well, I was going to say not all of us have that. Most of us don't have that. But we can do that for ourselves, finally. Recognizing that we didn't have it, so that magic inside of us, the thing that we are, the thing that we would have been drawn to if we hadn't been stopped, isn't gone. It's still there. And we can love ourselves into it. So I hope that this interview with Dottie reminded you, tickled that part of you, just even just a little. I'm closing in on the end of this show more rapidly than I'd like. I need to thank Josh Hackney, who rushes over here to fix stuff and is always on the end of the phone to tell me how to do what I didn't know I needed to do and don't know how to do. And I want to tell you that if you need anything that has anything to do with computers or recording or electronics, you want Josh Hackney. Oh, and my God, I bet I didn't even give my website this time. It is thelynnshow.com. T-H-E-L-Y-N-N-E. Don't leave the E in Lynn out. S-H-O-W. T-H-E-L-Y-N-N-E. S-H-O-W. And you can go up on that and click on email me and say, I want Josh Hackney. Or you can say, tell me how to get Dottie Anita Taylor's CD called A Morning Glory. If you heard the front of the show, then you heard that little piece of A Child is Born. And in a minute, we're going to go out on another cut. Dottie and her band playing I Thought About You. It's just remarkable. And again, you can go up on my website and click on me, and I'll tell you how to get it. Click on me. Click on email me. So as always, I hope that you heard something you can use in this show, something that amused you, interested you, challenged you, something that's going to bring you back, because I will be here next week, same time, same station, and I sure hope you will be too. And here, we're going out on Dottie Anita Taylor and her band playing I Thought About You.
getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. See that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that.